Before I read this letter, I want to give a little background information on the history of the firing of Jonathan Edwards from Charles Hodges' Constitutional History of the Presbyterian Church, The Great Revival. In 1749, when it became known that Jonathan Edwards had adopted the opinion that none ought to be admitted to the Lord's Supper but such as gave satisfactory evidence of conversion, the town was put into a great ferment, and before he was heard in his own defense, or it was known by many what his principles were, the general cry was to have him dismissed. That diversity of opinion between a pastor and his people on such a practical point should lead to a desire for a separation might not be very discreditable to either party. But when it is known that on this occasion, the church treated such a man as Edwards, who not only was an object of veneration to the Christian public, but who behaved in the most Christian manner through the whole controversy, with the greatest injustice and malignity, it must be regarded as proof positive of the low state of religion among them. They refused to allow him to preach on the subject in dispute. They pertinaciously resisted the calling of a fair council to decide the matter. They insisted on his dismission without making any provision for his expensive family. And when his dismission had taken place, they shut their pulpit against him even when they had no one else to occupy it. On the unfounded suspicion that he intended to form a new church in the town, they presented a remonstrance containing direct, grievous, and criminal charges against him, which were really gross slanders. And this was not the offense of a few individuals. Almost a whole church took part against Jonathan Edwards. Such treatment of such a man certainly proves a lamentable state of religion as far as Christian temper is concerned. The following letter by Jonathan Edwards is important historically because it is written to a man named Major Joseph Hawley. Joseph Hawley was at the head of the group of people within Northampton who pushed to have Jonathan Edwards fired as their pastor. But over time, Hawley began to repent of his actions, and he wanted Jonathan Edwards' input on the evaluation of what had went on. Later, Joseph Hawley published a retraction in a Boston newspaper. Jonathan Edwards doesn't mince words in this letter, and it is interesting because during the trial, he was so composed, so humble, that it was said that the things that were outside of him going on in the court was not able to disturb his inward felicity, but the fact of the matter is, inside, he was very, very hurt by what was going on. Stockbridge, November 18th, 1754. Dear Sir, I now, as soon as I am able, set myself about answering your letter of August 11th. Though I am still so weak that I can write but with a trembling hand, as you may easily perceive. I was taken ill about the middle of July, and my fits have now left me a little more than a fortnight. But I have been greatly reduced by so long continued an illness and gained strength very slowly, and cannot be so particular in my answer to your letter as I might be if I had more strength. I rejoice in the good temper and disposition of mind which seems to be manifested in your letter, and hope that whatever I may have suffered, and however greatly I may think myself injured in that affair which is the subject of your letter, wherein you were so much of a leader, I have a disposition in my consideration of the affair, and what I shall write upon it to treat you with true candor and Christian charity. Nevertheless, I confess that the thing you desire of me is disagreeable to me, namely, very particularly giving my judgment concerning your conduct in that affair, and it is with no small reluctance that I go about answering such a request upon two accounts. One, as it obliges me renewedly to revolve in my mind and particularly to look over that most disagreeable and dreadful scene, the particulars of which I have long since very much dismissed from my mind, as having no pleasure in the thoughts of them. And number two, as it is and will be looked upon by you, however serious and conscientious you may be in your desires and endeavors to know the truth, a given a judgment in my own case, a case wherein I was concerned to a very high degree, and therefore will be much more likely to be a giving of it in vain. Notwithstanding seeing you desire it, and seem to desire it in so a Christian a manner, I will give you my judgment plainly, such as it is, and as impartially as I am able, leaving the consequence with God. You know very well that I looked on myself in the time of the affair as very greatly injured by the people in general, in the general conduct, management, and progress of it from the beginning to the end. that this was in my judgment was plain enough to be seen, and I suppose no man in the town was insensible of it. And what were the main things wherein I looked on myself injured, and what I supposed to be the aggravation of the injury was also manifest, as particularly that the church and precinct had all imaginable reason to think that in my receiving that opinion, which was the subject of the controversy, and in the steps I took upon it, the declaration I made of it, and so on, I acted altogether conscientiously and from tenderness of spirit, and because I greatly feared to offend God, without, yea, to the highest degree against, all influence of worldly interest and all private and sinister views. I think it was hardly possible for the affair to be attended with circumstances exhibiting greater evidence of this. I think if my people, therefore, when the affair was first divulged, had been acted by a Christian spirit, or indeed by humanity, though they might have been very sorry and full of concern about the affair, but especially considering how long I had been their pastor, and they had always from the beginning and from so long experience acknowledged me to be their faithful pastor, and most of them esteem me to be the chief instrument in the hand of God of the eternal salvation of their souls, I say they would have treated me, if influenced by Christianity or humanity, with the utmost tenderness, calmness, and moderation, not to say honor and reverence, they would have thought themselves obliged to have gone far in the exercise of patience. But instead of this, the town and church were at once put into the greatest flame. The town was soon filled with talk of dismissing and expelling me, and with contrivances how to do it speedily and effectually, and most jealous eye from that day forward was kept upon me, lest I should do that slyly and craftily that should tend to hinder such a design. And almost every step that I took in the affair was, by their suspicious eyes, looked upon in such a view, and therefore everything served to renew and heighten the flame of their indignation. Even when I addressed myself to them in the language of moderation and entreaty, it was interpreted as a design to flatter the people, especially the more ignorant, to work upon their affections, and so to gain a party and prevent a vote for my dismission, or at least to prevent the people's being united in any such vote. And there was no way that I could turn myself, nothing that I could do or say, but it would have been such uncharitable construction put upon it. As I began the affair in the fear of God, after much and long-continued prayer to Him, so I was very careful in the whole progress of it, and in every step to act uprightly and to avoid every unrighteous and underhanded measure. Nor had I ever once formed a design forever to establish myself at Northampton and impose myself on the people, whether we should remain differing in our opinion and appointed controversy or not. Nor did I ever take one step with any such view. The things I aimed at were these two. First, that the people should be brought to a calm temper before extremes were proceeded to. And number two, that they should, in such a temper, hear what I had to say for myself and my opinion. But nothing could be done. The people most manifestly continued in a constant flame of high resentment and vehement opposition for more than 2 years together. And this spirit, instead of subsiding, grew higher and higher, until they had obtained therein in my expulsion, nor indeed did it cease in, but still they maintained their jealousy of me, as if I was secretly doing the part of an enemy to them, so long as I had a being in a town, yea, till they saw the town well cleared of all my family. Nothing would quiet them until they could see the town clear, of root and branch, name and remnant. I could mention many things that were said and done in a public manner, in meetings of the precinct, church, and their committees, from time to time, from the beginning, fully to justify and support what I have said and supposed, until my dismission, being the continual talk in all parts of the town, in private houses and occasional companies. But I think this can't be expected, as it would be writing a history that would take up no less than a quire of paper. I would only observe that I was from time to time reprehended by one that commonly was chosen moderator of precinct and church meetings, and chairman of their committees, Seth Pomeroy, in a very dogmatical and magisterial manner for making so much mischief, putting the church to so much trouble, and once he told me he did it by the desire and vote of the whole committee, which was very large, consisting of all or most of the chief men of the town. I was often charged with acting only from sinister views, from stiffness of spirit and from pride, and all arbitrary and tyrannical spirit, and a design and vain expectation of forcing all to comply with my opinion. The above-mentioned person, chiefly improved by the town and church, and set at their head in these affairs, once said expressly in a church meeting in a meeting house that it was apparent that I regarded my own temporal interests more than the good of the church, that the church had reason to think I designedly laid a snare to ensnare the church, and that they had best, by all means, to beware and see to it that they were not ensnared, and said much more to the same purpose. And he was never frowned upon but smiled upon by the church, continuing in such a way of treatment of me, was still made much of and set foremost in the management of the affair. There were multitudes of precinct and church meetings, many meetings of committees and conferences with me about this affair. I am persuaded there was not one meeting but that this unreasonable, violent spirit was apparent and is governing and prevalent. It seemed from the very beginning to govern in all proceedings and almost every step that was taken. The people were so far from seeking any composition that it was often declared in the meetings that if I should retain my opinion, though I should be convinced that continuing in it, I might go on in Mr. Solomon Stoddard's way, they would by no means have me for their minister, and their committee declared against any endeavors to bring me to this before the last council. Yea, they seemed to have a dread of my consenting to this. It being thus, I think the whole management of the affair was exceeding provoking and abominable to God, as most contrary to what ought to be in all public affairs, especially affairs of religion and the worship of Christian societies, and so contrary to the treatment due to me from that people, and especially in an affair so circumstanced, wherein they had such glaring evidences of my acting only from tenderness of conscience, and with regard to the account I had to give to my great master, and wherein I so carefully avoided everything irritating, and never offered the people any provocation unless yielding and condescending as I did to them in the things which I suppose they insisted on merely from humor and prejudice, in many instances for peace's sake, was a provocation, an affair wherein I with great constancy maintained a diligent watch over my own spirit, an affair wherein I sought peace and pursued it, and strove to my utmost to avoid occasions of strife, and to treat everyone in a Christian manner. Such an affair being so managed, I think no one should have put their hand to it, unless it were to check and restrain, and if possible to bring the people to an exceeding different temper and manner of conduct, and convince and show them how far they were out of the way of their duty. Until this could be done, I think not a step should have been taken by any means to promote and forward their designs. Instead of this, I am persuaded a judicious Christian in a right temper of mind, being a bystander, would have beheld the scene with horror, especially considering the dreadful work that it was making with the credit and interest of religion by such a town and church as that of Northampton, of such a profession and fame. And therefore, sir, I think you made yourself greatly guilty in the sight of God, in the part you acted in this affair, becoming especially, towards the latter part of it, very much their leader in it, and much from your own forwardness, putting yourself forward, as it were, as though fond of intermeddling and helping, which was the less becoming considering your youth and considering your relation to me. Your forwardness especially appeared on this occasion, that after you was chosen as one of the committee to plead their cause before a council, you came to me and desired me to stay the church on purpose, that you might have opportunity to excuse yourself from the business, which was accordingly done, and you did excuse yourself and was excused. But yet, when a matter came to be pleaded before the council, you, I think, very inconsistently thrust yourself forward, and pleaded the cause with much earnestness, notwithstanding. 'Tis manifest that what you did in the affair from time to time not only helped the people to gain their end in dismissing me, but much encouraged and promoted the spirit with which it was done. Your confident, magisterial, vehement manner had a natural and direct tendency to it. As to your remonstrance to the last council, it not only contained things that were uncharitable and censorious, by which facts were misinterpreted and overstrained, but it was full of direct, bold slanders asserted in strong terms and delivered in very severe, opprobrious language, merely on suspicion and surmise. As particularly therein, if I mistake not, was asserted that I had said after my dismission that I was de jure and de facto still the pastor of that church, which is a false charge. Again, I was charged with having a desire to be settled over a few members of the church to the destruction of the whole, and that I set out on a journey with a certain gentleman to procure a council to install me at Northampton, and that I contrived to do it at such a time because I knew the church was at that time about to send for a candidate and so on, that I might prevent their success therein. That I was ready to settle in that place, and for the sake of it had refused an invitation to Stockbridge, that I had neglected this opportunity for the sake of settling over a handful, that I had a great inclination to continue at Northampton as a minister, at the expense of the peace and prosperity of the greater part of the town, yea, that I was greatly engaged for it. Here's a heap of direct slanders, positively asserted, all contrary to the truth of fact. I had not refused the invitation to Stockbridge, or neglected that opportunity. I had no inclination or desire to settle over these few at Northampton, but a very great opposition in my mind to it, abundantly manifested in what I continually said to them on occasion of their great and constant urgency. It was much more agreeable to my inclination to settle at Stockbridge, and though I complied to the calling of a council to advise in the affair, it was on these terms that it should not be thought hard that I should fully and strongly lay before them all my objections against it. My discourse with particular ministers applied to in their own houses was chiefly in opposition to Colonel Timothy Dwight, and so was my discourse before the council when met. I earnestly argued before them against their advising me to settle there, with hopes that what I said would prevail against it, and very much with that conclusion. And what I said against it was the things that did prevail against it, and that only I complied to the calling of the council with a view to these two things. One, to quiet the minds of those who in so trying a time had appeared my steadfast friends, that they might not always think exceeding hardly of me, and two, the country having been filled with gross misrepresentations of the controversy between me and my people, and the affair of my dismission, and the grounds of it, to the great wounding of my character at a distance, I was willing some ministers of chief note should come from distant parts of the country and be upon the spot and see the true state of things with their own eyes. It was very contrary to truth that I contrived to set out at that particular time, because just then the church were about to apply to a candidate and so on, that I might prevent their success. For I knew not of any such thing. I had then no notice of that design or determination of the church, nor was that true that it is suggested that the procuring a council was the thing that occasioned our setting out on that journey. Each of us had other business, and should have gone, had no such things the council been projected. And therefore we went far beyond all parts where any of those ministers dwelt, and spent much more time there than with any of them. As to my seeking to disappoint and ruin the town and destroy its peace and so on, I did not in all this affair take one step with any view at all to a disappointment of the town and church and any of their measures for the settling another minister. I might mention other things in the remonstrance, but I am weary. These things being so, I cannot think that the church's reflections do in any wise answer their faults in this paper, and the injuries therein done to me. In their reflections they grant that they used too strong terms and language too harsh, that in some things they were too censorious, and had not sufficient grounds to go so far in their charges, that they should not have expressed themselves thus and thus, but had better have used other specified terms, which yet would have been for the hurt of my reputation. I confess, dear sir, I have no imagination that such sort of reflections and retractions as these will be accepted in the sight of God as sufficient, and all that is proper in such a case, and that it would be found that they that think so do greatly deceive themselves. The church in their remonstrance seemed to contrive for the strongest, most severe, and opprobrious, aggravating kind of terms, to blacken my character and wound my reputation in the most public manner possible. In their reflections on themselves, a contrary course is taken. There, instead of aggravating their own fault, which is a manner of true penitence, they most manifestly contrive for the softest, mildest terms, to touch their own faults in the most gentle manner possible, by the softest language. On the whole, sir, as you have asked my opinion, I think that town and church lies under great guilt in the sight of God, and they never more can reasonably expect God's favor and blessing until they have their eyes opened to be convinced of their great provocation of the Most High and injuriousness to man, and have their temper greatly altered until they are deeply humbled, and until they openly and in full terms confess themselves guilty in a manner in which they are guilty indeed, and what my manner of that is, I have in some measure declared, and openly humble and take shame to themselves before the world, and particularly confess their faults and seek forgiveness where they have been peculiarly injurious, such terms I am persuaded the righteous God will hold that people to, and that it will forever be in vain for them to think to go free and escape with impunity in any other way. Palliating and extenuating manners and daubing themselves over with untempered mortar and sowing fig leaves will be in vain before him whose pure and omniscient eye is as a flame of fire. It has often been observed what a curse persons have lived under and been pursued by for their ill treatment of their natural parents. But especially may this be expected to follow such abuses offered by a people to one which in their own esteem is their spiritual father. Expositors and divines often observe that abuse of God's messengers has commonly been the last sin of an offending, backsliding people, which has filled up the measure of their sin, put an end to God's patience with them and brought on them ruin. And 'tis also commonly observed that the heads and leaders of such a people have been remarkably distinguished in the fruit of God's vengeance in such cases. And as you, sir, distinguish yourself as a head and leader to that people in these affairs, at least a main of them, so I think the guilt that lies on you in the sight of God is distinguishing, and that you may expect to be distinguished by God's frowns, unless there be true repentance and properly expressed and manifested with endeavors to be a leader of the people in the affairs of repentance, as in their transgression. One thing which I think aggravated your fault was that you yourself thought me in the right in that opinion wherein I differed from my people. As to the nature and essence of true religion, my people and I generally were agreed. The things wherein we differed was that, supposing that our common opinion of the nature of true godliness to be right, a profession of it, or those things wherein we suppose the essence of it consisted, was necessary to church communion. In this you agreed with me and not with the people, so that in effect you own my cause and the thing which was the main foundation of controversy. To be good, and yet, in a manner before observed, set yourself at their head in their violent opposition to me. You say that in all your disputes you ever had a full persuasion of my sincerity and true sanctity. If so, then doubtless what Christ said to his disciples takes hold of you. He that receives you receives me, and he that despises you despises me, and he that despises me despises him that sent me. Matthew 10:40, Luke 10:16. And take heed, ye despise not one of these little ones. He that offends one of them, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he drowned in the depths of the sea. Matthew 18:10. Matthew 18:6. Thus, sir, I have done the thing you requested of me. I wish you may accept it in as Christian a manner as you asked it. You may possibly think that the plain way in which I have given my judgment shows that I am far from being impartial, and that I show a disposition to aggravate and enhance things, and set them forth in the blackest colors, and that I plainly manifest ill will to you. All that I shall say to this is that if you think so, I think you are mistaken. And having performed the disagreeable task you desired of me, I must leave you to judge for yourself concerning what I say. I have spoken my judgment with as great a degree of impartiality as I am a master of, and that which is my steady and constant judgment of this awful affair, and I doubt not will be my judgment as long as I live. One thing I must desire of you, and that is, that if you dislike what I have written, you would not expect that I should carry on any paper or letter controversy with you on the subject. I have had enough of this controversy and desire to have done with it. I have spent enough of the precious time of my life in it heretofore. I desire and pray that God may enable you to view things truly as he views them, and so to act in the affair as shall be best for you and most for your peace, living and dying. With respectful salutations to your spouse, I am, sir, your kinsman and friend, that sincerely wishes your truest and greatest welfare and happiness in this world and the world to come. Jonathan Edwards.